I saw this stat, which was insane, was that, and I think I showed you before, was that Logan Sargeant has outqualified Perez more than he has outqualified his own teammate, Albon.
Yeah, yeah, that's really insane, considering he's Logan freaking Sargeant, and everybody used to trash talk him, now it's just like, oh, dang, he actually outqualified Perez a couple of times already, that's just wild.
And people are not taking it as like, oh, Logan is just underrated, it's like, oh, damn, Perez is not doing well.
Yeah, exactly right, now nobody is really talking about Logan's pro profile. No, he's actually doing pretty well, to be honest, like, he's...
Welcome to Race Pod.
Okay, welcome back to another episode. My name's Nathan.
And I'm Jonathan.
Together, we are co-hosts of Race Pod, where we talk about all things Formula One.
Race Pod is the extension of Race Recap, a LinkedIn newsletter created by two F1 fans where we discuss the world of Formula One and various news surrounding it. Race Pod serves as an extension to that content pillar where we will speak about various off-track events from the F1 grid while looking at other motorsports around the wider community.
Right, so it's been a really, really hectic month for the month of Formula One so far. There's a ton of things that's happening on track and off track as well. But before we get into the episode, I think I just want to drop like a quick mention. Jonathan, you recently got interviewed by a content creator following your journey in law school as well. And you also give a quick shout out to RacePod. So yeah, John, tell us more about it.
Yep, just a quick shout out to my friends, Scarlett. Her Instagram handle will be at Scarlett MCY, ScarlettMCY, where we talked about my journey in regulatory and in various regulatory institutions and my journey from law school. And I give a quick shout out to Race Recap and RaceBot, where to say that this is something that we do on our free time. And then I've also analyzed various things from a regulatory standpoint for Formula One. It was quite an interesting experience, and then it was nice to speak to another law graduate who's ventured out of practice to see the various things that we can do from our careers.
Right, right. How did you and Scarlett meet each other? Just curious.
Yep, so we connected through our mutual friend, Carmen, which I'm quite sure you've met as well. I think at one of the events we met, and then we got talking. She said, like, oh, she has her own podcast, and so do I. We have our own podcast, and we thought, okay, we can do some bit of cross-promotion there.
Right, right. Interesting. Yeah, it's always fun to see, I mean, especially if you get any chance to talk about your journey in law school and especially that exciting journey to pivot outside of law, it's always a fun opportunity to do that. I think without further ado, let's just get right into it because there's just so much to cover. I think we crap on Alpine a lot. Like, I mean, it's a fact if you've been listening for over the past few episodes, right? We talk about their struggles, we talk about their on-track battles right now. And recently, there's been this huge news. I think there are two huge news from the Alpine camp that's just so wild. So I'll just let you handle it, John. Take it away.
So basically, as Nathan just mentioned, it's not a running gag in Race Pod for us to just shit on Alpine. So our top two news are basically big Alpine news. Firstly, it's technically a rumor, but the scale of it is so unbelievable that it has to make our top story, would be that Alpine is rumored to give up their engine program to become of their works engine program to become a Mercedes customer team. That's just insane. It's basically, imagine like some of the other teams like Mercedes giving up their Mercedes engine to become a Ferrari customer, Ferrari giving up their engine to become a Red Bull powertrains customer. It's just insane. So those are the rumors that are coming out, especially that Alpine has been in quite a bit of crisis. They also recently got rid of Ocon, which as mentioned in a previous episode. So there are rumors of rifts between Alpine's UK base, where they design most of the car in Enstone, as well as the engine department in France in Viry. This is where it came up with a shocking suggestion that Alpine may decide to give up their in-house engine solution. They could either sell it off or close it down and become a Mercedes customer team. Long-time viewers of Formula One, which Nathan, I think you know as well, like if you read some of their Formula One history, would be that Alpine had a very bad start to them, to the V6 turbo hybrid era.
Yeah, definitely.
They entered the V6 turbo hybrid era on the back of four consecutive championship wins with Red Bull. Technically a customer, but it was Renault powered. That was how they entered the V6 turbo hybrid era. But the moment they entered it, it was terrible. They were the second worst engine supplier, just ahead of the Honda project, which wasn't saying much. Mercedes and Ferrari were leagues ahead. So they have yet to recover from that, which eventually drove Red Bull away. Red Bull, which eventually then became, went to Honda, and now they're going to do the reverse of what Alpine is doing. They want to become a works team by producing their own in-house engines with Ford. That was the thing. And then they only had another team, like a stopgap measure for McLaren for about a couple of years before McLaren went back to Mercedes. And now nobody wants an Alpine engine. Well, except Andretti, but nobody wants Andretti. So does that really count?
So I mean, like, they're just slow. So, I mean, yeah, there's that.
Yeah, they're slow, they're unreliable. And like, yeah, and so there's like, what's the point of having an Alpine power unit? So this thing about a works engine deal on versus a customer status in Formula One makes a very interesting reading. So in the back burner for followers of Race Recap, I'm writing a piece where we've analyzed what difference does a works team make versus a customer team, and what are the implications of Alpine giving up their work status in order to become a customer. So stay tuned for that. We will cover that more. But safe to say, not fun times to be Alpine at the moment. So, yeah. Nathan, what do you think of the rumor that Alpine could become a Mercedes customer team?
Well, I mean, it's really interesting, right? I mean, the fact that Alpine is actually giving up their work status, which, you know, so many teams are trying to fight for it, right? Red Bull now are piling up with Ford to basically become their own works team as well. Obviously, when you're a works team, you have more control over the engine, which obviously affects, basically, if you can create an engine that's suitable for your chassis, it's a lot more, you have more control, right? When you're a customer team,
yep,
you kind of have to work with the engine that you're given with. So that's the whole point on why teams are really, really eyeing for that work team's control, that work team status. But man, if Alpine, because obviously there's a lot of thoughts that Mercedes are obviously doing, I mean, there are great news coming up from their camp to say that their 2026 engines might have an edge come the new regulations. So I guess that's the whole reason why they're eyeing for that Mercedes engine. But it just goes to show, it's just like, man, like they're just putting out all of the cards in their bags, you know, and just like, you know, right, we basically reshuffle our entire technical structure, you know, we got the most volatile driver lineup, you know, we botched our strategy. We did every single thing in our cards to basically try to save our season. Yeah,
to give a recap to our listeners, they fumbled Piastri, they fumbled Alonso, they fired Othmar, so many of their technical staff left, they fired Ocon, and yeah, some of the technical staff are still leaving, and now they're going to fire the engine, they're thinking of firing the engine department too. What's wrong with Alpine there? Which leads nicely into our next point.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're firing up on all cylinders. And I think one of the biggest news, I mean, if you are a hardcore F1 fan, this would definitely shock you. Flavio Briatore is actually returning to Formula One with Alpine. He has been appointed as their executive advisor. So if the name doesn't ring a bell, so let me take you a trip down memory lane. So Briatore has been a long-time fixture with the Enstone team in their previous guises as Benetton and Renault before resigning in their disgrace for his involvement in the Crashgate scandal of the 2008 Grand Prix. So for newer fans of Formula 1, Crashgate scandal was basically the controversial ways in which the Renault Formula 1 team ordered Nelson Piquet Jr. to purposely crash his car to trigger a safety car that allowed Alonso to eventually win the race. So thanks to his direct involvement, Briatore and a couple of other personnel at the time received a lifetime ban from Formula 1, although that was later on reduced to an appeal. On appeal later. So his involvement in Crashgate was so serious to the point that it affects Briatore's interest in other sports, like his directorship of English football club Queen's Park Rangers, as the English FA has inquired the FIA for details on the investigation to determine Briatore's suitability as a fit and proper person. So yeah, I mean, right, John, I mean, coming back to the point of Alpine, right, you know, they are considering to give up their engine literally, you know, they fumbled their driver lineup so many times. Now they're bringing back Briatore. Is this a good move? Or, you know, are they just like trying so hard to trying to turn their season around and trying to just basically stay relevant for 2026 and beyond?
I mean, to me, it just looks increasingly desperate. But credit where it's due, it's not just Alpine. As stated previously mentioned, Briatore was not the only Team Enstone official to be given sanctions from the FIA thanks to their involvement in Crashgate. Pat Simmons, another senior Renault official at the time, was also given sanctions, and I think he was given an initial 5-year ban from Formula One, but that was also reduced on appeal. And as listeners of our podcast have remember, Pat Simmons has recently been hired by the Andretti team and has been working with Formula One recently. So 2008 was a very long time ago, despite what Felipe Massa wants to remind everybody with his court cases. But that aside, 2008 was a very long time ago. But it's not a great look for Alpine. Bring back the architect of that. Basically, Briatore isn't known for being a nice guy. He's ruthless. He's won titles with Enstone, but he isn't a nice guy per se.
Yeah, but I think there was also the rumor that, like, with Briatore in, and I think recently Gasly re-signed with Alpine for 2025 and beyond, there's rumors that, you know, they're trying to gun for Sainz to go to Alpine because of the whole rumors that, you know, Alpine is going to give out their work status and basically trying to get their Mercedes engine in, so that might be a factor. But it's just like, dang, the rumors are just flying out. That Cam is just wild.
Is Sainz that desperate? I'm like, come on, man. Audi has been waiting for you, and I think, for what it's worth, Sauber's last in the Constructors' Championship, but they're at least more stable than Alpine, or is more sane, at least. Or even Haas.
Yeah, exactly. Sainz had a couple of decent options, right? Like, do you really, really want to go that low and that desperate to actually sign for Alpine just to stay in Formula 1? You know, I'm just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, come on, Sainz, it's like, really, Alpine? Think it through. It's like there are at least like a lot better options out there. Yep. So okay, I mean, now whilst we're also on the topic of various big name hires, Aston Martin have added more big name hires to their already established team. Firstly, Aston Martin has hired Andy Cowell, the former managing director of Mercedes High Performance Powertrains, to become their new group CEO. He would be replacing ex-McLaren team principal Martin Whitmarsh in the role. Viewers were unaware of Andy Cowell's credentials. His experience has included leading the development of the strong BMW engines in the early 2000s, which powered the Williams BMW in the early noughties, before BMW set up their own team with Sauber, and then moving on to the all-conquering Mercedes power units in the V6 turbo hybrid era. Everybody knew how strong they were. Basically, they had rocket ships, while Ferrari had decent engines, Renault had a speedboat, and Honda had a sail, I guess. So yeah, that was pretty good credentials. And now he's joining Aston Martin, replacing Martin Whitmarsh, who's done a decently quiet job. I don't think he's made any controversial statements. I think he's just done an effective job, and now time to step away. Besides that, Aston Martin has also hired Enrico Cardau, who Ferrari's technical director for chassis and aerodynamic departments, to become its new chief technical officer and slotting into the organization chart above incumbent technical director Dan Fallows. This is an interesting development because, I mean, currently Ferrari's chassis and aerodynamics haven't been doing that great, and they have suffered a lot of bouncing and porpoising recently, but as noted in The Race in one of their recent articles, good technical staff just don't get bad suddenly. One bad idea or some bad development doesn't make the guy bad. So, fair enough. I guess he could be interesting. And Enrico Cardau looks a very capable person to be CTO. Interesting how he'll slot above Dan Fallows in the organization chart. But yeah, so like, I'm not sure what's that. But I mean, it's not unreasonable. It could be just giving Dan Fallows a more focus on the car itself. So it could ease the load on Dan Fallows and then just help with the car development cycle, which Aston Martin has suffered after having a strong start of 2023, but they've kind of tailed off recently. So yeah, Nathan, what do you think about Aston Martin's recent hires?
Yeah, I think the name to note is Andy Cowell, because obviously he was with Mercedes during the eras where they dominate Formula 1. So it's really, really interesting to see what he can do to replace ex-McLaren team principal, Martin Whitmarsh. And also the fact that Dan Fellows is out, right? I think Dan Fellows used to be Ike's Red Bull as well. So yeah, and then that kind of explains the early strong performances in 2023.
He's not out per se. It's just that he's not the top guy. It's more like somebody came. Not when he's not above him.
Right, right. Okay. Because like Dan is actually kind of decent. So I guess that they wanted to bring Cardilli from Ferrari because he's Ferrari, I guess. I mean, yes, their development this season so far has been a little bit of like up and down. So they brought some upgrades which were working too well and it's giving them some side effects that they didn't necessarily foresee. So it'll be definitely interesting to see whether all these big name technical hires will actually contribute towards on-track performances, right? Because there's sort of like a gap between when you bring in these big name hires, they can't work on the car immediately. The earliest impact you can see on the team is probably 2025 and beyond, but obviously very crucial because 2026 is when the new regulations coming in. But yeah, definitely a lot of big name hires. Yeah, so
well, I mean, I'll add one point to that. If Aston Martin have made big name hires already, which both of Errico Cardal as well as Andy Cowell are both capable people, does Adrian Newey still fit in? That's an interesting question.
Oh, yeah. Because there was there were rumors to say that he was considering between Aston Martin and McLaren, I guess. They were like UK teams. I think Ferrari was in the mix. And then after that, it was just like, yeah. So that's that. But I mean, we'll see. That's a really good point that you raised. Like, with all these big name hires, how does Adrian Newey fit in, right? Because obviously, he's like the star of the team. And you bring in Newey with this kind of lineup, it's hard for him to shine, to be honest. But yeah, speaking about Formula One, has always been a team sport and the drivers would always be in the limelight. So with that in mind, Haas has taken an interesting step with their driver lineup. So first off, they've announced that Ollie Bearman will be driving for Haas in 2025 and beyond. This is kind of interesting because I don't think we have seen a rookie signing a multi-year deal in their very first year. So this shows how much faith that Ferrari has in Ollie Bearman. Obviously, he has this impressive substitute performance in the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, where he finished 7th and scored 6 points on his F1 debut. So despite that, Bearman has only had a single win in Formula 2, even though he has to give up his pole position to make his F1 debut. So it's quite clear that Bearman has always been very highly regarded, even right before his debut as well, when he was doing those free practice sessions at Haas, he gave really, really good feedback to the engineers. So yeah, Ayoko Matsuda, the team principal, was just blown away by his performance. And yeah, it's no surprise that they're bringing in Bearman for 2025 and beyond. So in addition to that, there was a news that just dropped today at the time of recording that Kevin Magnussen will no longer be driving for Haas. So Haas will actually be entering a new driver lineup for the first time since 2021, when Roman Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen were replaced by Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin. So, John, what do you think about this new move as well as the potential rumors of who is going to pair Bearman in 2025 and beyond?
I think the only Bearman news was kind of expected. Everybody thought that Haas would go for him. I guess it was just a matter of when. What surprised me more was Magnussen was not renewed, because I would think Haas wouldn't want two rookies, so I'm guessing they would still go for an experienced driver. I was betting on Magnussen because there was already some continuity there and Magnussen hasn't really done anything to upset Haas. So what I would think now probably would be they'll go for a similarly experienced driver. My bet is like probably Valtteri Bottas. So that Audi can just have like a clean slate for 2025 and 2026. So yeah, that would make sense because I don't think that their two rookies thing worked out in 2021. Mick Schumacher and Nikita. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it didn't. It didn't at all. That was a horrible move. So yeah.
I mean, the main beneficiary of that was all the Drive to Survive wheels. Those were hilarious. But yeah, it did not work out for Haas in that. So yeah, I think Bearman stands a good chance, but he needs a good support system and not sure. Haas looks to be in a better place now than when the Gunther Steiner Drive to Survive time, which entertaining as they were, I don't think they were the best supportive team for them.
Yeah, Haas are definitely in a better place right now, especially with all the work that Komatsu is trying to work behind the scenes, because Haas is a very unique team in which they have like, they don't have like a single base, or they're basically three departments working together to basically build the car and, you know, develop the car. So, you know, when there's cross communication between departments in different regions, it's always really hard. So he's been working tirelessly behind the scenes to basically fix that problem. And I think so far every upgrade they brought were effective. So that's nice. You don't lose out a lot of time, and then you can actually focus on developing your 2025 car. But I definitely agree with you that.
Yep, and we will come back more. Yeah, come back more to Haas on that later, because it's like there have been other news as well. But sorry to cut you off. Go yeah. on.
Sorry, I was in the middle of speaking there, just like, yeah. I definitely agree with you that they are going for an experienced driver, because they actually, yeah, I was also a little bit surprised that they didn't keep Magnussen, because for continuity's sake and how well they've been working together, even Komatsu went out to say that, like, they have a great working relationship. But it's also not surprising, because Kevin has been in the spot for quite a long time. And it's rumored that this is probably like the end for him. I don't see him coming back again. Yeah, so there's that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to bring back Grosjean either, right? So probably somebody new this time. So yeah, one Ferrari young driver taking his first steps in Formula One. Another former Ferrari young driver is left questioning his future in the sport. And of course, we are talking about Sergio Perez. Perez has been in quite a bit of a Red Bull contract limbo recently. You wouldn't expect that, because Perez just signed a contract extension with Red Bull a month ago, I think. Yep, so despite that earlier confirmation that he signed a new contract, the recent news is that the Mexican seat isn't as secure as everybody previously thought. Various F1 news outlets have now suggested that there are various performance clauses in Perez's new contract that will allow Red Bull to terminate the agreement and replace him when necessary. The terms of these are just, of course, rumors, but part of this is that if Perez isn't within 100 points of Verstappen by the summer break, then Red Bull has the right to replace him along those lines, but of course, it's unconfirmed. So Perez, after a relatively strong start to the season where he shadowed Max Verstappen home and got podiums in 4 of the first 5 races, except Melbourne, where Red Bull kind of disintegrated there, the Mexican's form has just dropped off dramatically, with no podium since the Chinese Grand Prix in April. That was 3 months ago. A lot has happened since then. So this has led to some constant speculation that Red Bull are planning on swapping him out with former driver Daniel Ricciardo or Liam Lawson. Funny to see there's no buzz around Yuki Tsunoda. Sucks to be Yuki, I guess. So yeah, Helmut Marko has stated that there'll be some evaluation of Perez's contract post-summer break, and Lawson has recently been in a modern F1 car Red Bull F1 car in Silverstone to do some trackside filming. So could that be a sign, or it could just be some innocent filming marketing thing? So Nathan, how realistic do you think that Perez could lose his seat? And if he does, who would you replace him with?
Oh, Perez. Man, like, talk about the definition of a bad day. I mean, his performance has dipped so hard. I believe that they were gunning for the contract extension to basically boost his confidence, with the hope that, okay, we renew your contract right now, so basically the contract's out of the way, you can focus on driving. Yeah, that didn't really happen. As to how realistic it is for Red Bull to basically give him the boot mid-season, it's really hard to say, right? There are obviously performance clauses within his contract, and to my understanding, I think Marco also came out to say that performance clauses aren't mandatory. They are just there, but the team can choose to exercise it or not. And this isn't the first time that Perez hasn't actually met his performance clauses. In fact, throughout his time with Red Bull, he's only met the performance clauses once his entire time racing with Red Bull. So yeah, he's not doing great right now, but I mean, it's more of a concern now, because his underperformance is actually opening up the door for teams like McLaren and even Mercedes to catch up in the constructors, which is like quite worrying. And yeah, Max isn't winning all the races like, you know, in 2023. So definitely, the need to reevaluate his seat is there as to, you know, who they're replacing with, right? Is it Ricciardo? Is it Lawson? Maybe even Tsunoda? To my understanding, I don't think they will promote Tsunoda for like a couple of reasons, mainly because like the Honda backing, and also there are just other commercial factors at play that's basically preventing him from getting a promotion, even though he's doing like absolutely superb in their V Cup this season so far. So it boils down to whether do you want to give a chance to, you know, the honey badger Daniel Ricciardo or the young Kiwi driver Liam Lawson. If I was Red Bull, I would put Lawson in the seat because he's shown a fantastic performance when he was substituting for Ricciardo when he injured his hand. And yeah, like we've mentioned in the previous episode, Ricciardo has been in Formula 1 for a good period of time, and Lawson hasn't even had a chance to be in Formula 1. So yeah, that's who I think Red Bull should replace him with if they're actually going to do like the mid-season boot.
I mean, personally, if it works out in an ideal world, I will bump up Yuki to the senior seat. I'll bump up Yuki to the senior seat, put Perez in the junior V Cup seat, and replace Ricciardo with Lawson, because Ricciardo's not doing anything recently. If it was a perfect world. But yeah, Formula One never works in that way, because Lawson definitely deserves a seat. Ricciardo is there more for marketing and filming, rather than any actual performance. And Perez, I saw this stat which was insane, was that, and I think I showed you before, was that Logan Sargeant has out-qualified Perez more than he has out-qualified his own teammate Albon.
Yeah, that's really insane, considering he's Logan freaking Sargeant, and everybody used to trash talk him. Now it's just like, oh dang, he actually out-qualified Perez a couple of times already. That's just wow.
And people are not taking it as like, oh, Logan is just underrated. It's like, oh, that Perez is not doing well.
Yeah, exactly right. Now nobody is really talking about Logan's No, he's actually doing pretty well, to be honest. Like, he's coming to a point.
He's not doing really that okay. I mean, he's not doing bad. He's just doing fine, I guess. It's like, there's nothing to speak about.
He's in the Williams. Yeah. Perez is in the Red Bull. Two different cars. You know, very, very different expectations, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's insane. Like, basically, Williams are currently ranked, I think, 9th, you know, 8 or 9 on. And to out-qualify the championship-leading Red Bull car, one of the Red Bull cars, more often than your own teammate, that's just insane. Like, what in the world is going on?
Yeah. And also, it's not clear why Perez is underperforming, right? Whether it's... I know the car hasn't always suited his driving style, but I mean, you're an F1 driver, right? You're paid to race with the best of the best. So, you know, yeah, I just don't think it's an excuse, you know? It's just like, you know, you get a handed Apple laptop and be like, I can't use it because, you know, but you work at Apple, it's just like, you're expected to know. So it's just kind of like, yeah, that's just... It's just bizarre to see, like, how is he still underperforming? And this isn't the first time that we are here. But while the Red Bull story feels like a developing movie, right, let's cast our eyes to the actual Formula 1 movie that's actually going around the paddock. So recently, during the Silverstone Grand Prix, we got the teaser for the new Formula 1 movie starring Brad Pitt. So this movie is being directed by Joseph Kosinski and Jerry Bruckheimer. They have recently dropped their first teaser trailer. The plot features Brad Pitt as a retired Formula 1 driver from the 1990s, which is weird because he's like 60 years old apparently, but okay, named Sonny Haynes, who actually gone on to race in other disciplines and returned to Formula 1 to mentor a rookie prodigy played by Damson Idris in the fictitious 11 Formula 1 team. So the movie has featured Pitt and Idris filming certain scenes in character alongside real Formula 1 drivers performing pose qualifying and post-races duties, which made for surreal scenes. I think one of the most bizarre one was when Lando, obviously, you know, he was super gutted. He couldn't go for the win. He was giving a really, really heartfelt interview, and Brad Pitt was just right there doing his post-fucking race interview for like Apex GP, which is like the 11th team. So yeah, the movie is set to be released in theaters in June 2025, and it has definitely attracted a lot of attention from the paddock. Obviously, it's directed by the same director who directed Top Gun Maverick. So, in fact, if you look at the trailers for Top Gun Maverick and you put them side to side, it looks almost the same, which is like freaking insane. But I mean, yeah, obviously they're going for the realism, you know, it's it looks good. So yeah, John, like, how excited are you for this upcoming movie when it releases next year?
I'm decently excited. Of course, I'm trying to keep my expectations manageable. Like, the recent racing movies I really enjoyed Ford v Ferrari quite a number of years ago. And also, I've also really enjoyed Gran Turismo last year, which was really fun.
Yeah, we watched it together. Yeah, I watched it twice, actually. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was really fun. That was really fun. So I'm expecting like that kind of action-packed, fun ride. Just like a decent sports movie. And then like that looks pretty fun and decent. And the fact that it's been filmed on actual tracks with actual tracks in the paddock and everything, it adds a degree of realism to it, which, yeah, definitely gives it some credibility. I think in the trailers, all the Formula One fans were like, wait, that's Gunther Steiner.
Yeah, dude. I mean, when Gunther, like, when the show has seen of Gunther, I'm just like, oh, dang, okay, that's Gunther. I was like, oh, yeah. It was hilarious, you know. I think it was the Apex GP team principal that was just messing around. And then Gunther was like, what? I was just like, yo, yeah.
Yeah, no, that was like a treat for all the Formula One fans. It's like, oh yeah, I caught that reference. So yeah, that should be fun. I mean, I'm not sure how many tracks they filmed that. Like, I know they definitely filmed that Silverstone, but I'm not sure how many tracks they filmed that. And apparently, they also dressed.
There was a mix of real life, like real track filming, and also because they digitally replaced some of the cars. Like let's say there was a shot in the trailer that was shot in Spa. That was actually Gasly's car. That wasn't the real Apex car. So they just digitally replaced Gasly's car using CGI and stuff like that. So yeah, but I think I saw them, like they filmed in like Silverstone, Abu Dhabi, Monza. So yeah, there's that.
Yeah, and I think also like they had like some of the tracks at a spare pit garage. They put up the Apex GP thing, basically like a fake 11 team, which I mean, comes back to my original point of like, come on, Formula One, you can accommodate a fake 11 team but not a real one? What kind of nonsense is that?
Yeah. There's a joke. Like, dude, there literally is an 11 team over there. So what's the excuse of like, oh, we can't host an 11 team? Like, it's just complete. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like a fake 11 team for like Hollywood and movies. They're gonna get at even less than a real 11 team. But yeah, that's besides the point. It's like, It's such a common thing that for us to complain of like some of Formula One's reasoning on like the 11 team thing. But on the movie itself, yeah, it looks interesting, looks exciting, decently optimistic. Just, I'm expecting just like a cliche sports movie, but yeah, it should be fun. The trailer looks exciting.
Yeah, I think like let's just move on to the bite size update. So if this is your first time hearing the episode, the bite size update is basically a really short section where we digest some of the news, where it's not, you know, too big for us to discuss on the episode. So these are literally called bite-size updates. So it's just small snippets of really interesting facts that have occurred off-track throughout the entire month. So John, take us through. I'm sure you're really excited for this. Like, it was, everyone was looking forward to this. It was the debut of the RB17 at the Goodwood Festival of Speed.
Yeah, okay. So when the pictures first came out and the RB17 track car first made its debut, all the pictures came out, we all fell in love. It looked like a work of art. It was beautiful. So when Red Bull debuted the RB17 at the recent Goodwood Festival of Speed, and yeah, as previously said, I think everybody's jaws dropped. You could tell Adrian Newey really put his passion and time there. Especially since it would be his last car signed for Red Bull before he leaves the organization in 2025. So a quick run through, the RB17 has a carbon fiber monocoque chassis powered by a mid-mounted naturally aspirated V10 engine, providing 1,000 brake horsepower, assisted by an e-motor producing an additional 200 horsepower. So for those of you counting at home, that's 1,200 horsepower. That's a lot of horses. As for the aerodynamics, the car features wheel wing management systems for smoother airflow and adjustable wings to improve aerodynamics. According to Red Bull, the RB17 will produce 3,747 pounds of downforce, which is actually double the weight of the RB17 itself. That's how much aerodynamic grip the car produces. According to Red Bull spec sheet, the RB17 has a top speed of over 217 miles per hour, with Red Bull themselves claiming that the car would be the set times which are equal to Formula 1 cars. Which, yeah, for a track car, that's really impressive. As previously mentioned, this will be Adrian Newey's last car designed for Red Bull before it leaves in 2025, and that's one way to go out. Definitely going out with a bang.
Yeah, yeah. Like, literally going out with a bang. Like, yeah. I mean, if you just look at the stats for the RB17, it's just insane. And like you mentioned, it's a work of art. It's truly a work of art. I don't think we've seen track cars or even hypercars achieving this kind of level, which is just insane with the downforce and the top speed. So, yeah, definitely interested to see if... I think there were rumors to say that they might go Le Mans with the RB17. They just need a few tweaks. So, that'll be interesting. Speaking of interesting as well, there are other news from the Audi camp. So, obviously, Audi is going to come into the sport in 2026. And they're partnering up with BP and Castrol for their oil and lubricants. So this strategic partnership with BP includes the development of advanced sustainable fuel as required by the technical regulations and a range of bespoke Castrol lubricants and greases. It should basically enable more performance from the Audi F1 power units. So yeah.
Yeah, so basically to simplify this partnership, BP and Castrol are basically going to be what Petronas are for Mercedes or what Shell is to Ferrari. Just producing the fuels, lubricants, and oils for their power units and car. Which, I mean, it's a bit of an underrated thing. It's like, usually don't see like the big benefits of it. There's no such thing as a fuel war or an oil war in Formula 1 compared to other. There was a tire war in like a couple of decades ago. But yeah, it's interesting. And hope to see where the collaboration brings. I mean, Now all they need is like a second driver, but yeah, seems like Carlos Sainz is a bit busy for that, so who knows?
Yeah, I think this last one is pretty interesting as well. So if it happens, it's wild. So yeah, take it away, John.
Yep, so I guess the last one is a piece of news that just came out yesterday at the time of recording would be Haas are currently rumored to be in talks to use Toyota Gazoo Racing Europe's facilities in Germany. So for viewers at home, Toyota Gazoo Racing Europe is basically Toyota's European motorsports team. They are the current dominant force in World Endurance Championship. So usually when you see them competing at Le Mans and the other endurance races, yeah, that's them. Well, they are currently in rumors with that, and it is unlikely that this tie-up would be a full works operation, as Haas has also just recently extended their Ferrari technical partnership until 2028. So don't expect to see a Haas Toyota by then. But the interesting thing is that these facilities in Germany, in Cologne, are long-time Toyota facilities that have been used for motorsport. It was originally built for Toyota's Formula One efforts in the early 2000s, which... For listeners of the podcast that have not been following Formula One since the 2000s, Toyota in the 2000s were a very high spending team. They had a lot of ambition, but not a lot of success. So from 2002 to 2009, they had a best championship position of fourth and no wins. And they spent, I think, close to like $2 to $3 billion. A lot of their budget and spending were equivalent to Ferrari, but they were nowhere close to being a Japanese Ferrari.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, interesting. I mean, obviously not the full return to Formula One, but still interesting to see like a nice little reference to Toyota, possibly in the near future. But yeah, with that said, we've come to the end of the episode. So once again, if you stuck around for this long, thank you so much for listening to us. So don't forget to follow us on Spotify and drop us a review on what you thought about the episode. And if you'd like to see more updates, feel free to follow us on LinkedIn for, you know, the latest news on what we are writing, or, you know, just see what's up with the previews and post-race reviews as well, written by our writer Gaslan. So yeah, so once again, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Jonathan.
So stay safe, and I'll see you in the next episode.